This is The Full Story. I'm Tom Kooser. We seem to be learning how to adjust to life with a hopefully less virulent form of COVID-19. For the moment, masks are optional, and people are back in stores, restaurants, theaters, and bars. But the impact of the pandemic at its worst has left a mark in many ways. Businesses, especially small ones, were hit hard. We thought it was time to check up on business health, and we begin with Paul O. Robertson, the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Economic and Community Development for Connecticut. He joins us via Zoom. Commissioner, welcome to The Full Story.
Well, thank you for having me. Good morning.
And congratulations. I understand you started the job two, 3 months ago, so congratulations on your appointment.
Thank you.
How would you describe the pulse of business right now in Connecticut? Healthy, needing some help? How would you describe it?
So right now, I would kind of describe the pulse of, it's still tough for many businesses, restaurants. Of course, there's inflation. Cost of food has skyrocketed. Employees are struggling. It's a slim margin on profit. Retail, habits have changed. Businesses need an e-commerce platform in order to really kind of take to the next level. Arts and cultural, they've been leery of big crowds. Businesses that haven't pivoted have had a tough time. If they don't have a strong website, urban areas of businesses are struggling with workers trying to get back to full time. And, business and industry are doing well. And I think there's some businesses and industries that are doing well, which include like healthcare, digital marketing firms, home improvement contractors, construction's booming. And in Connecticut, I think we're positioned to really kind of move forward.
Some of the businesses that you kind of put your finger on in terms of ones that are still working hard to get back up to speed, small businesses. And I understand there's a specific program, the Small Business Express program, that helps certain businesses who are getting up and running. Could you talk about this program a bit and describe what it offers?
Yeah, so Small Business Express program was originally created after the Great Recession of 2008. And it was a time where banks weren't lending to small businesses. And so now in 2022, the banks are lending again. And so we're looking to target our efforts at small businesses and communities who weren't able to access, traditional lending, such as our state's distressed municipalities. A little bit about the small business, it's kind of taken on a new role than kind of what it was before. And it's more, we're not doing more loans. We're more in the, in terms of the grant portion of it.
Mm-hmm. So is there a type of business that takes advantage of this, or is it just determined by how large a business or how small a business is given the type of industry they happen to be in?
Well, it runs the gamut. I mean, when we talk of small businesses, we're talking local, which in this case, a lot of the local businesses are looking for technical support, business advising, which is another piece of it, and financial advisors, but it covers the gamut in terms of a lot of the small businesses that we have. Also, let me talk a little bit about this. So we've got small businesses that are reaching out to our office, and our agency hear from them all the time. The frequency is nowhere near where it used to be before pandemic. And so we rely on a lot of our partners, such as the Small Business Development Center of Connecticut, U.S. Small Business Administration, and others help field questions and provide resources to support small businesses in need.
Are there private entities also involved with the small businesses participating in the program?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because I think what we've leaned to is to, private partner relationships, small businesses with private partners. There are tons of opportunities and grant opportunities that have kind of spawned as a result of pandemic. I mean, I think last year, I think the U.S. Business Administration gave about $1.9 billion in loans to 23,000 small businesses in Connecticut. And it was from the Paycheck Program during the pandemic that had an impact on local businesses. So that was a lifeline for small businesses who were shuttered by pandemic. And in Connecticut, there were two rounds of PPP loans allowed businesses to keep employees on the payroll and provided a bridge to get business owners through an incredibly stressful and uncertain time. So, you know, a lot of what the businesses are looking for support level now, you know, at the Department of Economic Development, we connect businesses regularly with those who need support. We're close to rolling out a new iteration of the Small Business Express program, which you asked about. We're partnering with the lending community, and instead of providing direct loans coming out of the pandemic, we believe that this will help us capitalize lenders who can support small business and traditionally underserved or underbanked communities.
Is it challenging at all to get private entities, to get private partners involved with the program?
In Connecticut, we've got a myriad of programs and partnerships that have developed. And I think one of the things that has worked well in Connecticut is a lot of the private businesses have been anxious on board because, again, it's a chain effect that we're working together, again, very private, public partnerships. And I think we've done extremely well in Connecticut in pushing that model as opposed to being kind of a lone source.
Why is that kind of a connection important, connecting two sectors, you know, private entities, small businesses? What makes that a healthy way to make it possible for struggling or businesses that need some help to succeed?
I think, for me, and in terms of kind of looking at the private partner relationship, the benefit is that in private industry, there are some hurdles that they figured out. And in terms of sharing a lot of that expertise, what we see is a lot of small businesses looking for that in order to succeed. And I think the private structure is helpful in terms of the structure of it. I think small businesses glean a lot of information in terms of how things are run and kind of the process and the system. And as we're seeing, especially in Connecticut, there are a myriad of agencies that are helping with, you know, technical assistance, the process on how to find money, how to build a business, how to kind of navigate through, you know, this new lifetime, this new lifestyle, this new life that we're all engaging in. And it is very different on how we worked traditionally years ago. So I think the benefit is with small businesses, there is a benchmark and an opportunity to learn in terms of how to kind of crack the code of getting through opening up the kind of landscape to find money and how to build it and build on it and build an audience around it.
It sounds like business has, small business, certainly all business, I guess, has come to some new conclusions or new ways of doing things due to the pandemic, maybe ideas that will stick around for some time to come. From your perspective as both someone representing the state of Connecticut, the Economic Development Division, and from your perspective as someone who's worked in the private sector for a number of years, are you seeing changes that you think will stick around, changes that will make it possible for especially small businesses to stay up and running through all sorts of problems?
Yeah, you know, as you said before, it is a different world. And from an economic development perspective, yeah, I do believe there has been a lot of opportunity in place. There have been a tremendous amount of grants that have come in to the state. There are several programs. If you check on our website, we've got the Community Investment Fund. We've got the Innovation Corridor, and if your listeners could go on our website, you could see more details about it. But there's several programs that are in place that I think will change the landscape and will enhance kind of where we're going. And there, again, a lot of opportunity to take advantage of that. I did want to talk about a few things that we are doing to support small business that would probably help, which is we launched the business.ctgov website, which is creating a one-stop site for starting or managing your business in Connecticut. We've prioritized keeping businesses open during the pandemic while, you know, keeping residents safe. We've administered like financial assistance to help small businesses navigate the pandemic. And then also, just to kind of throw this out, the biennial budget, which included $50 million to Small Business Express program, which is being revamped. It's expected to launch in June. And this investment will provide capital to small businesses in need. There's also the $155 million added to unemployment trust to provide relief of Connecticut businesses in the wake of the pandemic. And also, we've held a line of credit tax increases for businesses and residents, all while, you know, state rainy day fund, which has grown historic levels. And, you know, I think a budget discipline has really created a tax certainty for our small businesses here in Connecticut. So just wanted to add that.
Paul O. Robertson is the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Economic and Community Development for Connecticut. Commissioner, thanks for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom. Have a great day.
You too. Bye. Thank you. For a closer look at how small businesses in particular are doing in Connecticut, we turn to Catherine Marks. She's the District Director of the U.S. Small Business Administration Connecticut District Office. Ms. Marks, welcome to The Full Story.
Thank you for having me.
Certainly. Well, as the name suggests, you keep tabs on and help small business owners from the federal government's perspective.
Yes. And what we saw in 2020 and 2021 was unprecedented. Our small businesses confronted uncertainty, disruption, hardships at an unprecedented level. And yet what's really amazing is that they were able to overcome these challenges because of the entrepreneurs that they are. And some have achieved some well-earned successes. They've innovated, they've created, and they've found new ways to serve their customers, to support their workers, and in so many instances with our small businesses, to sustain communities that they live in.
And is that generally true through most of the small businesses? All sorts of varieties. Did some types of businesses do better than others? As we measure that at this point in time?
Right. We can measure some things with small businesses. The SBA advocacy has looked at where our businesses are. And indeed, in the first two quarters of the pandemic, almost 9.1 million jobs were lost in the small business sector. That is unprecedented and very unfortunate. And yet in the four quarters that have preceded that, we've brought back almost 5.5 million of those jobs. So just at 60%. But so we're still hurting in the small business sector. And the small business sector runs the gamut, from a restaurant to someone who's turned a hobby into a business, to a retailer, to a small manufacturer. And in every community, small businesses are different in the metro cities like Hartford than they are in the shoreline of Connecticut. But overall, we're still going to need to help these small businesses. We're still going to need to support them in order to try to achieve getting all those jobs back that were lost in the early onset of the pandemic.
Last year, the SBA gave $1.9 billion in loans to 23,000 small businesses in Connecticut from the Paycheck Payment Program, happening during the pandemic, of course. That must have had a significant impact on local businesses.
It did. And every single day when I talk to a small business, many of them will say they couldn't have survived without the Paycheck Protection Program. Why? Because going back and remembering back those times, these businesses were shut down. There was no revenue coming in. There were still expenses to go out. So they needed that support. In total, for 2020 and 2021, the COVID relief programs in Connecticut alone brought in $13.3 billion. And that's all of our pandemic relief programs. So that's the COVID EIDL disaster loan. That's the shuttered venue operator grant. That's the restaurant revitalization fund. And then, as you mentioned, the Paycheck Protection Program. So there was some really big pushes to help our small businesses. And I know many that would not have survived without that help. And they're still struggling. They're struggling with labor costs. They're struggling with inflation. The price of goods sold to them is more expensive, and can they pass it on to their customer? And also supply chain issues, especially some of my retail companies. You can't sell a kayak until it's on your floor. So that's going to be some still struggles that they're going to see moving forward as we recover from the once, hopefully once in a lifetime COVID pandemic.
Are the small businesses having as much trouble finding workers as some of the larger companies?
They are. I was just at a manufacturing facility in Stamford on Monday. And what was really interesting when I talked with management there is they're not only having trouble finding the engineers that they need, but they're also having trouble finding the low-skilled labor. So it's full spectrum of labor challenges that they currently have.
So that was quite a bit of support, of financial support that came through in 2020 and 2021. And you mentioned that there are still struggles going on with small businesses. What kind of support do they need now? Did that money coming in for those 2 years create some sort of an artificial, almost bubble that once it pops, it will create quite a few problems down the road?
So first, the COVID economic injury disaster loans are loans. And right now, these companies that receive those are still in a deferment period. But many, what they needed was a stopgap. They needed to have those resources, again, to keep their employees, because the Paycheck Protection Program was exactly that. It was to help keep folks on payroll. Unfortunately, small businesses, it's a challenge. Every single entrepreneur has to come in with two things. They have to come in with determination, and they have to come in with sacrifice. It is not easy to be an entrepreneur. So there are going to be some that failed, but there are going to be many that succeed also, and they're succeeded because they were given that assistance to get through that very difficult time.
When we spoke about a year ago, we asked you about status of businesses owned by women and people of color, which were among the hardest hit by the pandemic. And I'm asking again, is this still the case? Are they still struggling, or are things looking up for them?
I don't have any specific metrics for those in Connecticut, but I can tell you that we continue to make very directed outreach to both those groups. Number one, as we talked about last year, women left the workforce at an unprecedented rate during the COVID pandemic. And some of them, as they're returning to the workforce, they're choosing to do it in a very different way. We're seeing high small business starts in Connecticut, but those small businesses need our assistance. And we offer free assistance. And yes, that's the four-letter word free, F-R-E-E, to help those entrepreneurs start and succeed. It takes a lot, as I said, to start a small business. So we are making concerted efforts to help both women-owned small businesses, minority-owned small businesses, and businesses in the low-income community, because we know that those small businesses that are started there are also the fabric of that community and just play a really important part in that ecosystem.
Sounds like you've been pretty busy over the past 24, 36 months.
Yep, we hardly get breakfast in, that's for sure.
You mentioned more and more new startups happening during this period, during the pandemic. Are any businesses, small businesses, looking to expand as well right now? Is that part of sort of new business startup?
It is. And in fact, I'm going to go back to that manufacturer that I went to visit on Monday in Stamford. They are looking for additional space to expand in Stamford. So we are, you're seeing a mixed bag, but you definitely are seeing expansion. And I believe that there was a contingent of our state delegation that was in Fairfield this weekend, also visiting Bigelow Tea, that's also looking to expand. So it's important that we make sure that we reach out to them so that they expand here in Connecticut and that they have the assistance that they need to expand.
A definition, if you would, when we say small business, what's the threshold that moves a business from small to perhaps medium or large, or basically out of what you would consider to be a small business?
Yep, that's not a yes or no question, I'm afraid to say, because it depends on every single industry. So, for example, there's many micro businesses. A micro business is a business of less than five employees. But when you're talking about manufacturing, some manufacturers can have 300 or 400 people, but they're still considered small because of the industry that they're in. But I like to say, a small business is less than 300 people, but it all depends on which industry they are in. And there's actually quite a bit of bureaucracy that goes into defining a small business.
Catherine Marks is the District Director of the U.S. Small Business Administration's Connecticut District Office. Ms. Marks, thanks again for your time today and the update on how small business is doing in Connecticut. We appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye-bye. We're taking the pulse of businesses in our region. So, how healthy are the various industries right now in Connecticut, and what type of support are they seeking as we adjust to living with COVID? We've invited the Connecticut Business and Industry Association to talk about that. It represents the interests of its members, thousands of them, by, among other things, lobbying state lawmakers on their behalf. Christy Pantema is the President and CEO of CBIA, and he's here on Zoom to give us an update on how those businesses are doing in this third year of the pandemic. Mr. DePentima, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Good to talk to you again.
Certainly. What does your temperature taking tell you about the current health of business in Connecticut?
It continues to be a bit of a mixed bag, although getting better every month with the recovery from the pandemic. Many businesses have incredible demand for their products and services. Those in the service sector, though, leisure, hospitality, Main Street businesses, continue to struggle with foot traffic being absent in our larger cities, especially in the Hartford area, the non-Fairfield County areas of the state where most of our large businesses have not fully gone back to the office and may not fully go back 5 days a week into the office. But some sectors, like I said, manufacturing, construction, professional services are seeing record demand for their product and services, and their struggle is around the workforce crisis, which continues to plague Connecticut harder than a lot of other states.
Have you lost many members during the pandemic, businesses going out of business?
We haven't heard of a lot of businesses going out. We've actually grown membership during the pandemic because as many folks know, it's been a really challenging time to understand the rules of engagement, what the latest changes are. It's been such a dynamic, changing world that businesses just crave that information. Early on, it was about who's allowed to stay open and who has to close. Then it was the gradual reopening. Then it was the vaccine availability and who's in line next and how does that process work. So it's been a very dynamic time. And as a result, businesses have been starving for information and have seen CBIA as a resource to get that information. So we've actually seen membership growth. We haven't seen businesses close. And interesting in Connecticut over the last 2 years, there's been a record number of business startups. We saw about 39,000 starts 2 years ago and over 40,000 starts last year, much higher than the 10,000 to 15,000 we see on a regular basis in Connecticut. And a lot of that may be folks leaving the employment world, if you will, being an employee and starting up their own businesses.
It almost sounds counterintuitive. You've explained why it's happening, but it almost sounds counterintuitive that people would do something as risky, and it's always risky to start your own business, but doing it during a pandemic.
Yeah, it's an interesting time of the pandemic. So a couple things happened that maybe caused folks to think about opening their own business. One, there was a record amount, an incredible amount, I shouldn't even say record, an incredible amount of money injected into the global, national, and local economy by governments, nearly north of $13 trillion on a global level. And in the United States, tens of trillions of dollars coming to the economy. So folks ended up with quite a bit of money, quite honestly, as the pandemic was happening, as well as the stock market doing very well during that time. So the retirements were held pretty safe. At the same time, the pandemic, I think, caused us all to pause and think about what's important in our lives. And many people reconsidered their employment positions and said, I've always wanted to have my own business. I've always wanted to start a business. I've always wanted to do this. And so the financial backing that was pushed out by the federal government, as well as people wanting to maybe do something different in their lives, have different purpose and mission, caused folks to start up these businesses. In addition, the third element is the pandemic created a demand for certain services and products that didn't exist pre-pandemic. Mm. You think about the cleaning, mask wearing, safety of apparatuses and apparel. That didn't have as high a demand as it did pre-pandemic. Also, much more need for local sourcing because of supply chain issues. So there was just a demand out there that people were able to fill by opening up their own businesses.
Do you get a lot of requests? It sounds like you've been very busy over the past couple of years then with the pandemic. Do you get a lot of requests from not only existing business owners, but the new startups about finding employees, about how to find workers? Because we're still hearing that it's really a problem to find workers to fill those jobs.
Yeah, it was something that a problem that existed pre-pandemic, and it's just gotten worse during the pandemic, specifically here in Connecticut. You know, the latest job numbers, we have 109,000 job openings in Connecticut. Our labor force, which is those who are currently working and looking for work, has shrunk since February of 2020 by north of 70,000 people. And that shrinkage here in Connecticut, while we're only 1% of the U.S. population, it represents 41% of the U.S. labor force shrinkage. Think about that, a little old Connecticut, 41% of the labor force shrinkage. It's hit us significantly. A lot of people ask me, well, why is that? Why does Connecticut have a bigger challenge than, you know, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and the Northeast states or the rest of the country? And we had some structural issues that existed pre-pandemic. Our population growth was 0.9%. It was relatively stagnant since 2010. And if your population doesn't grow, your workforce doesn't grow, then the pandemic hits, a lot of people retire or retire early, this whole silver tsunami happens, and as a result, our workforce shrinks. At the same time, as I mentioned, businesses are seeing record demand for their products and services, so they need more people than ever, and you end up with this massive gap of 109,000 people, more needed than we have working today. So yeah, businesses often reach out to CBI about what's the best practices in retaining and recruiting talent? What else can I do? What else can Connecticut do? What are some policies that we could advocate for? And number one, we continue to advocate for growing the population in Connecticut. If we can grow the population in Connecticut, we can grow the workforce in Connecticut.
Did the injection of all of that money to help individuals, to help businesses, did that create an artificial situation to some extent that will not exist once those dollars are gone, and perhaps put at risk some of the new business startups and even some of the existing older businesses?
It could, certainly. You know, you see a high failure rate on startup businesses. It could, you know, they have the opportunity, because we do have 109,000 job openings, to have this safety net of going back to their old job or going back to working for a business if their business fails, which in a tighter labor market, you know, maybe that opportunity doesn't exist and folks are less willing to take the risk, as you describe it, of starting their own business. But that is something we have to watch. We also have to watch, you know, for potential recession as inflation continues to outpace wage growth. And wage growth has been tremendous. I think wages are up over 8% of the last 12 months, but inflation is up over 10%. As inflation continues to rise, do we risk a recession? Do we risk a downturn in the stock market, which is also providing a safety net financial cushion? Does that cause kind of a reverse back to where we were pre-pandemic?
Connecticut legislature is still in session for another week, I believe, up till next Wednesday, hashing out the state budget right now. You mentioned that attracting people into the state is one of the answers to certainly the stretched job market, and other things that CBIA is interested in regarding just the general business community. Are there things going on in Hartford now that you are looking at in a positive light, and others that perhaps you'd like to go away?
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on up at the Capitol right now with then next Wednesday. There's four things we've been advocating for that to keep legislators focused on. One is maintain Connecticut's fiscal stability. There were some great practices put in place in the 2017 bipartisan budget with spending caps and revenue caps, and not to get into the gory details, but that has given Connecticut a record rainy day fund. It's allowed us to start to pay down our long-term debt liabilities, which is something that's been looming over Connecticut's head for a long time. And as a result, we have a best-in-class rainy day fund in Connecticut compared to the other states. So maintaining that fiscal stability, don't divert from what's gotten us to this point. Number two is making the state more affordable for individuals so that people want to stay in Connecticut and move to Connecticut. And there's been a lot of discussions around lowering property taxes, child care credits. Those are all great things as long as we can afford them. And we need to figure out a way to afford them to make the state more affordable for individuals. We've also been advocating number three for business affordability, make the state more affordable for businesses so businesses stay here and want to move to the state. This session has not been so great there. I mean, there's a couple of tax proposals that maybe will help extend the manufacturing apprenticeship tax credit to our small businesses. We've been pushing for extending the research and development tax credit to small businesses. That doesn't look like it's going to get through, but there will maybe be a study around that. We need to continue to make the state more affordable, especially for more our small businesses. And number four is making it easier to do business in Connecticut. And this is kind of more around mandates. And this session has not been great, quite honestly, around that. There's been a ton of labor mandates pushed out because it is an election year and folks want to make sure they secure, you know, unionized labor's votes come November. But there's been a lot of labor mandates pushed out by the legislature that are still being debated. There's still time for them to not pass. But we're concerned that a few will pass that will really hinder the ability to make it easier to do business in Connecticut.
There was a bill that I believe got tabled, or it didn't move to the floor of either house, I don't believe, that concerned workers who wanted better notice when their schedules were going to change so they could plan their lives, basically. And I don't believe that moved forward. What was the CBIA perspective on that?
Yeah, the bill was a Fair Work Week bill, and this is, I think, the second year it's been raised. And you know, quite honestly, the bill and the form towards the end wasn't that bad, and we were not advocating against it. It would have applied to businesses with 500 or more employees. It would not have applied to franchises. And I think most of those larger companies, if you think about department stores, are already giving 2 weeks of schedule to employees. So it would not have been too bad. We wanted to make sure it didn't apply to small businesses. If you're a business of 10 people, and someone called out sick because of COVID or childcare issues, which continue to plague us in Connecticut, we wanted to make sure that the businesses weren't going to be penalized for adjusting that 2 week schedule. They were excluded from the last bill, but as you mentioned, it looks like it has died in committee because the parties couldn't get an agreement on what the final language was going to look like.
Chris DiPentima is the president and CEO of the Connecticut Business and Industry Association. Mr. DiPentima, thanks for your time today and your insights. We appreciate that.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Certainly. As we just heard from Chris DiPentima, the president and CEO of CBIA, there were a record number of business startups in Connecticut over the past 2 years. We'll ask our next guest if that trend is likely to continue. James S. Bizdira is president and CEO of the Community Economic Development Fund. It's a source for small business loans in Connecticut. Mr. Bizdira, welcome to The Full Story.
Good morning to you. It's my pleasure to be with you.
And we're speaking via Zoom here today. First of all, could you tell us a bit more about the Community Economic Development Fund, the work you do, and how to determine what a small loan is, a threshold size, that sort of thing?
Sure. I'd be happy to. So the Community Economic Development Fund, also known as CEDF, we are based in Meriden, Connecticut. We are close to celebrating our 30th anniversary. We lend and provide business advice statewide throughout all 169 municipalities in Connecticut. What our specialty is that we make loans and, again, provide business advice to true startup businesses, young businesses, and existing businesses that cannot obtain traditional bank financing. So no disrespect to banks. They play a huge part in the economic system here in Connecticut. But most true startup businesses, Tom, banks view as just too risky. A lot of existing businesses that have been around for a number of years, perhaps the owners of those businesses have low personal credit scores. perhaps 1 year the business is profitable and the next year it's not. And a lot of banks pass on those opportunities. That's the niche that we fill. In general, we are much more creative and flexible than a typical bank can be. And our mission, our goal, our focus, our resources, our passion is really helping those startup, micro and small businesses that cannot get traditional financing. We are making loans whatever to fit the need of whatever the applicant needs. Sometimes, Tom, that's loans as small as $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 to buy a small piece of equipment, to buy some laptops, to get the business up and operating. Other times we're making loans $10,000, $50,000, up to $300,000 or $400,000, whatever the applicant needs. And typically those loans really fall into one of three buckets, either working capital lines of credit, term loans, again, to purchase equipment, inventory, to pay off high interest rate debt from another lender. And then the third bucket would be owner-occupied commercial mortgages. So in a very brief nutshell, I can sometimes go on for 15 or 20 minutes, but that's kind of the mission and focus of the Community Economic Development Fund.
And your organization itself is a not-for-profit. What kind of a organization is yours?
Good question. Yeah, we are a 501c, mm-hmm. a nonprofit organization. And as I keep reminding myself, I've been privileged to be the president of this fine company for about 7 years now. As I keep reminding myself and my staff, yes, we're a nonprofit. Yes, we're a mission-driven lender and provider of business advice. But guess what? We're also a small business. We have 14 employees. We're fortunate enough to own our own property here in Meriden, subject to a mortgage. We have a cleaning company come in once a week. We have a company that cuts our lawn and cleans off our snow. So we are, among other things, a functioning, proud small business here in Connecticut.
And you mentioned that startup small businesses often have trouble getting funding from traditional sources, banks, what have you. Mm-hmm. It sounds like the type of business then that you would give a loan to could be any type. It's not restricted to one genre or another.
Exactly. At last count, about a month or so ago, we had about 225 total customers, Tom, in about 40 different industries. I like to say we are industry agnostic. We've got borrowers that are in manufacturing, retail, wholesale, accounting practices, a couple of dental practices. Basically, any industry you name in Connecticut, we have a borrower that sits within one of those industries. And I think that's one of the strengths of our organization that makes our borrowers that much stronger, our organization stronger, our loan portfolio more resilient, is we've got so many borrowers from so many different industries that make this state great.
Just curious, any approaches from those looking to open a business in the newest industry in Connecticut, the marijuana retail business?
We have some applications here and there. Unfortunately, because the federal government still has not approved marijuana as a legal business, I know most states have, including Connecticut, obviously, because the federal government still prohibits, still does not recognize that as a legal entity. And we are in part funded by the federal government. Unfortunately, at this point, we cannot entertain those applications.
We've heard that during the pandemic, sort of a counterintuitive fact, but there was an increase in the number of people looking to start up a business, entrepreneurs looking to get on their feet and rolling. Did you see a significant jump in the number of people who reached out to your fund during the pandemic?
Very good question. The short answer is yes, we did. In the last 2 years, and now it's been, about 25 months since COVID came across came onto our shores. Typically in a normal year, we are financing of our total new originations, about 20% are startups. In the last 18 months, Tom, that's probably grown to about 33%. I think a couple of things. One, a lot of folks that were working, let's say, for larger corporations or even smaller mid-sized businesses, perhaps they lost their job, or perhaps they said, you know what, I want to start my own business. So we've seen an uptick in that. I think with the opportunities in the marketplace, where a lot of people see, you know, downside, the entrepreneur, God bless them, and see the upside and the opportunity. We've seen a number of restaurants, you know, shutter, let's say between early 2020 and early 2021. And we've seen a fair number of applicants come into us looking to borrow money to take that now vacated restaurant space and open up a new idea or a new restaurant in that same location. So yeah, we have definitely seen an uptick in startups and new applications to us. And that continues right through yesterday.
I've heard too that it's been challenging for entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs from low and moderate income communities to get traditional forms of funding for their ventures. As you mentioned, that could be part of the new startup hesitancy that banks have. But do you hear from many folks in low and moderate income communities who want to get up and running?
We do. And we, again, we've been in business now, Tom, for almost 30 years. You know, given our mission and who we are and our, again, where we put our resources and our energy, a large portion of our borrowers, almost from day one here, have been Black, Hispanic, African-American, and women-owned and veteran-owned businesses. I think even in the last probably 2 to 3 years, we've even increased our focus on that. But yeah, there's a large number of minority and historically underserved entrepreneurs and business owners that definitely are starting to form their own businesses. We especially see that among Hispanic women, again, in all different lines of business, whether they're honestly landscaping companies, a couple of small manufacturing firms, hair salons, accounting firms. Again, we see growth in that whole sector, but especially in the last probably 3 to 4 quarters among Hispanic and Latina women.
Has the pandemic changed, do you think, from your perspective, from a group that gives out loans, changed how people start new businesses? And do you look at things any differently during the pandemic and post-pandemic? Have things changed permanently in any way?
That's an excellent question. I do not believe they have. I can't speak to what banks are doing or other community lenders like us, but from our perspective, Tom, you know, we're doing the same underwriting that we've been doing, you know, for, again, almost 30 years, and definitely for the last 7 years I've been here. You know, a lot of flexibility, a lot of creativity. We really want to hear the applicant's story. And I started off in commercial banking many, many years ago. And when I was first started in banking back in the mid to late 80s, a lot of banks really wanted to hear the stories of that applicant. You know, the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? If that applicant had a low personal credit score, why do you have that low credit score? And how can we help you improve it? If there wasn't enough collateral for the loan, you know, how do we work with you as a bank back in the day to recognize that and structure a loan that takes advantage of the collateral that's present? So from our organization here, honestly, we're still underwriting the loans the same way we have, you know, before the pandemic, during the pandemic. And now, obviously, we're looking at financials, and we know that in most cases, most of our businesses are going to show lower revenues beginning in April of 2020 for the year 2020. But in most cases, Tom, most of our businesses, their revenues rebounded in 2021, maybe not to 2019 levels, but darn close. And the early numbers we're seeing for the first quarter of 2022 are even showing a strengthening. So a long-winded way of saying, for the most part, we're underwriting the same way we always have, looking to be as flexible and creative as we always have been. And again, we're seeing a very strong bounce back by companies throughout 2021, and especially in the first 3 or 4 months of this year.
James S. Bizdira is the president and CEO of the Community Economic Development Fund, located in Meriden, Connecticut. Mr. Bizdira, thanks so much for your time today. We appreciate your insights and information about companies that look for and get small business loans.
My pleasure, Tom, to be with you and your listeners. And I'd love to be back and join you at some point, maybe later this year, to give an update on where the economy stands at that point.
We'll invite you. Thank you very much. We're checking in on the health of businesses in our region as we emerge from the pandemic and learn to live with COVID-19. Businesses owned by women and people of color were especially hard hit by the pandemic. We want to know about their status today. And we've asked Dr. Fred McKinney, the co-founder of the economic consulting firm BJM Solutions, and the former president of the Greater New England Minority Supplier Development Council, to join us, and he does so via Zoom today. Dr. McKinney, welcome back to The Full Story.
Well, it's good to be with you, Tom.
From your perspective, since you certainly keep your thumb on the pulse of business in Connecticut and minority-owned businesses specifically, what is the current health of those businesses in the state, especially the ones who seem to get hit the earliest and the hardest once the pandemic descended upon all of us?
Well, you're absolutely right. The pandemic, the effect of the pandemic on small businesses in general and minority businesses in particular was disproportionately hard. And many of those companies did not survive. In fact, you know, there was a fairly well-quoted study by Stanford University that showed that minority businesses, Black businesses, had almost a 3 times higher rate of failure during the pandemic than white small businesses, and Hispanic businesses were more than twice as likely to fail during the pandemic than white-owned businesses. And so, yes, there it did hit the community of diverse businesses very hard. And, you know, we're still seeing some of the effects of the pandemic on these businesses. And I was just looking at some data from the state of Connecticut. And the state of Connecticut has only recovered about 80% of the jobs that were lost during the first 3 months of the pandemic. So from February to April in 2020, you know, the Connecticut lost almost 300,000 jobs, and we've recovered about 80% of those jobs. Now, a lot of those jobs were with small businesses who had to close their doors because they didn't have customers. So if you don't have customers and you're not set up to do, you know, remote business, then you're in trouble. And you're going to be in trouble despite having PPP money to tide you through, because ultimately, if you don't have customers, you don't have a business.
The PPP money, that now that you bring that up, was that not distributed equally among small businesses as far as, you know, who really needed that help to you know, pay those folks who were on their payroll? Minority businesses were less likely to benefit from that.
I think that's an accurate and unfortunate description. We know that early on, and there were some adjustments made in the program after in the first phase of the PPP, it was very clear that minority businesses were not receiving essentially their share of those resources. And a lot of it had to do with how the program was structured. And so the PPP program worked through the banking system. And the small businesses were told, you know, go to your bank and the bank will lend you the money and we'll pay the bank back. But the problem was that many of the very small businesses and minority businesses did not have the banking relationships necessary to get those kinds of loans. And so the money ran out before the really small and minority businesses could go to those financial institutions and request financial support. It did get better in the second phase of the program, but for many businesses, it was already too late.
We did talk for this program with an organization that does provide loans to small businesses, and he pointed out that many small businesses, especially women and minority-owned businesses, just had trouble even getting up and running as a new business, pandemic aside, because the banks weren't willing to essentially take a risk on a new business. And they were sort of behind the eight ball doubly because of that.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I think this might be a service to a lot of your listeners. Banks in general are not in the business of lending money to small businesses without a whole lot of guarantees that they're going to get paid back in full. And so it was always difficult for small and diverse businesses to get loans from commercial banks. But the pandemic and that situation made the risk even higher to make those kind of traditional loans to small businesses.
Have you heard from any of the owners of those businesses that went under during the pandemic? Do you think they're still excited about running their own business? Would they try again to get up and running in the future?
Yeah, I have this notion that once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur. And so,
you can't keep a good entrepreneur down.
Yeah, the good entrepreneurs will learn from this experience and understand the exposures that they had pre-pandemic. And the good ones, they won't repeat those errors. And so they will come back, and I think they will come back stronger, more resilient, and more aware of the risks and realities that they face as business owners. So long term, I'm optimistic about minority entrepreneurs and women entrepreneurs getting back in the game. We're already seeing that at the state level and at the national level. The number of filings for new businesses in Connecticut is off the charts. Mm. So business entrepreneurs are coming back. What the real challenge, in my view, is will these new businesses and will these entrepreneurs come back with businesses that really meet the needs of today's market? Because, as someone told me recently, now you've got to use the term BC, before COVID and after COVID. And so businesses that are formed after COVID are going to look very different than BC businesses. And we'll see what happens. It's still, it's still real. We're still in the COVID and in the pandemic to a certain extent. And so it really hasn't shaken out yet. And you're seeing a lot of that in how companies are behaving. It runs the range from totally remote to totally back in the office. And I'm not sure where we're going to settle, but I don't think it's going to look like business in 2018.
You mentioned a record number of filings for new business applications in Connecticut, even during the pandemic. Are women and people of color well represented in those new filings?
That I don't know, and I'm trying to get my finger on that. I suspect that they are. The state is really tracking what they consider to be business. They're really paying attention right now to businesses that have the potential to employ lots of people. Mm. And so they're looking at manufacturing firms, restaurants, and others. And we know that minority businesses tend to be in smaller types of businesses that don't employ a lot of people. So, there's the good news and bad news there. The good news is those are easier businesses to start, but they're also more vulnerable to sort of economic changes and puts them at risk of really having some trouble. So I don't know, but that's a great question.
Dr. Fred McKinney is a co-founder of the economic consulting firm BJM Solutions. Dr. McKinney, thanks again for joining us once again on The Full Story with your insights about small business. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Tom.
In order to survive and thrive, businesses need to advertise. And that's a challenge for small businesses, even in the best of times. On Long Island, two women designed their company to do just that, to highlight goods produced locally by other entrepreneurs. It's called Locally Bred. Let me spell that. It's L-O-C-A, capital L-I, and then Bred, B-R-E-D. The co-owners join us now on Zoom, Hallie Geller of Huntington. Ms. Geller, hello and welcome to The Full Story.
Thank you so much for having us today.
Also, Teresa Pinelli of Centerport. Welcome to you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
When did you launch your company?
In October of 2018. So we're about 3 years old now.
And where did that idea come from? It's rather unusual.
Yeah. Well, we were two corporate moms, and we wound up home in Huntington, New York, with two little ones. And it was kind of time to do something of our own again. And we were brainstorming, what can we do? We don't want to drag back into the city. In our previous lives, we lived in Brooklyn. And at that time, there was that kind of that renaissance of, you know, pickles being made on the roof, and everybody had beehives and smorgasbord. And we thought, you know, Long Island actually has more of that going on. We're much larger. We have farms over here. And we were visiting all these different things with our children. And we grew to have like a deep appreciation for them. So the idea of Locally Bred came about that to really showcase all of the wonderful things being made and produced on Long Island by all the great entrepreneurs out here.
And Hallie Geller, how does it work? How does your business operate? You hear from businesses that want to advertise, or you reach out. How does it work?
Sure. So we spend a great deal of time looking around, looking for new businesses around the island, new people making different things. It could be out of their homes. It could be in a shared kitchen, or, you know, a larger size business. And we showcase them. We have a seasonal subscription box, so we're always showing new businesses and new products that are being made here. And after a while, we got a name around the island. So we have a huge list of people that have reached out and really want to be involved in the business. And it's just been a fabulous way to get to know the local community and showcase all these great businesses around here.
How many businesses do you partner with?
At any given time, it's dozens and dozens, but we've worked with hundreds of local businesses around the island. It's something that we're extremely proud of around here. It's really important to us.
So, Teresa Pinelli, it sounds like there are boosts in sales for your clients when their products are featured in your gift boxes.
Yes, absolutely. So one of the things we really pride ourselves on is showcasing new and upcoming businesses. So our subscribers for our boxes and the people giving them as gifts, one of the reasons they love it so much is because they get to kind of get a sneak peek of who's up and coming. And so we're very excited to have these small businesses approach us and to be able to kind of introduce their brand across Long Island and beyond, because we also have a lot of subscribers from expats in Texas and California. Oh. So that's very exciting to us. So it gives these brands that might only sell online, or even just on Instagram, we show a lot of brands that only show on Instagram, that ability to get kind of a broader audience. And so that's something that's very exciting for us, that they kind of get a sneak peek. And then these brands really kind of take off from there. If they have a good product and they have a good brand, people pick up on it and then seek them out.
One thing we're doing today is sort of getting an update on the business climate, given everyone's entry into the third year of the pandemic. And when the pandemic hit the region, and you mentioned you were up and running in 2018, so a year and a half, 2 years before the pandemic started. Once the pandemic hit the region, you saw a bit of a drop in business?
Well, actually, right at the beginning, we actually saw a boost in sales. We're an online-based business, and it's also about supporting everything we do is about supporting local. So if people actually really got behind the idea of as a way to support local businesses that were struggling, and because we were using local businesses, we didn't have all of the delays that that other companies had in getting things. We're not waiting for things to come from overseas. So in the beginning, it actually was a boost for our sales. And now that, over the past couple of years, things are starting to normalize, I would say, for our business. But we do face other challenges right now, particularly increased cost of everything. Everything is going way up, from shipping, even our cardboard for our boxes, all the supplies. Things are definitely, the costs are increasing now. That's what are one of the large problems we're facing.
So supply chain issues, including costs, that's been a problem for you too.
Absolutely. And a lot of the vendors that we work with have issues getting the products that they need to make and produce the goods that we're sourcing. And so there's a lot of delays and increased costs there as well. So we're kind of getting it from all sides.
Have you had to, with that in mind, have you had to change how you run your business due to the pandemic and the problems that it's caused?
Yes, we've definitely had to implement some cost increases, which it was something we struggled with, because one of the ideas behind our subscription box in general is to make it so readily accessible that people really want to sign on and support these local businesses. But we had to increase our costs. I mean, we had to institute a shipping fee, which we never had done in the past, and, you know, increase costs for our boxes in general, just so it could sustain our business, really.
One of the things we've heard from officials in the region, including some in Connecticut, is that there actually was an increase in the number of people opening new businesses during the pandemic. Seems, I don't know, counterintuitive, but apparently that's what was happening. And you mentioned new businesses are the ones that you like to showcase or who come to you. Did you see a growth in new business activity on Long Island during the pandemic?
We absolutely did. And you know what a lot of it, I think, was a lot of people who had been in an office setting, maybe they had more time on their hands, they were working from home, or maybe they lost their job. And so they started these little side hustles where they would, you know, a lot of baked goods and things like that, that they would start making in their homes and selling. And then when the farmers markets started opening up, they would go to the farmers markets and sell it there. So I feel like we saw a lot of companies start like that, that have actually really grown a lot since the pandemic started.
Right. We've also seen some younger folks, too. I think they were back from college. They weren't able to go back. And so they became entrepreneurial while they were at home stuck in their parents' house. And so we saw a lot of great businesses kind of spawn from that as well. And some of them haven't even gone back to school. They actually, their businesses are doing so well, they're able to sustain without having to go back to school. So that's a great story, too.
It sounds like you're optimistic about economic recovery in the at least the near and medium future.
I think that people are getting scrappier. I think that the pandemic taught us all to kind of go back to our roots a little bit, to quiet down our minds and our busy like corporate schedules maybe, and take a step back and think about what we could do. And I think that's where people became new small business owners. And so I think it was either a second source of income to help support them through the pandemic and through these tougher times. And if they did a good job of it, it's continuing to be a bigger thing and more successful. So we're hoping to see more businesses do that and continue to be successful through these tougher times.
Hallie Geller of Huntington and Teresa Pinelli of Centerport are the owners of Locally Bred on Long Island. Thank you to both of you for being with us today. We appreciate your time.
Great. Thank you so much.
And good luck with your business down the road. How about you? Are you ready to be an entrepreneur? Do you feel the time is right to open your own business? Tell us about that. You can email us at tfs@wshu.org. We're on Twitter at @FullStoryWSHU. That's our program for today, produced by Fatou Sangare and senior producer Ann Lopez. I'm Tom Kuser. Thank you for listening to The Full Story.